Sweden and Finland say they want to join NATO. That's despite warnings from Moscow. With Russia's invasion of Ukraine, are those countries under threat? And what will NATO membership mean for the Nordic region? This is Inside Story. Hello, welcome to the programme. I'm Adrian Finnegan. Before the Russian invasion of Ukraine, NATO membership barely featured in political debate in Finland and Sweden. But Moscow's actions and nuclear threats may have gained the Western military alliance two new members. The leaders of both countries have the support of Germany, where they recently met Chancellor Olaf Scholz to talk about security in the region. Moscow has repeatedly warned of serious consequences if Finland or Sweden join the alliance. The decision will be neither easy nor quick. If they apply, the parliaments of all 30 NATO countries need to approve new members, and that could take time.
If these two countries decide that they want to join NATO, they can count on our support. The members of the government made that clear here in the talks, and I think that is an important signal. In any case, both countries can always rely on Germany's support, regardless of NATO membership, and in the period before a decision is made on such membership.
Well, the leaders of Finland and Sweden say the decision will come down to what their respective parliaments think is in their best security interests.
As Russia wrongfully claims the right to dictate the choices of others, NATO's open-door policy is even more important for us all. We have to decide on whether to apply for NATO membership or continue on our current path. That is the discussion we are having now in our national parliament. Whether Finland's decision will be joining NATO or not, it will be based on our will to contribute to our common security.
My government is right now, together with all the political parties in the Swedish Parliament, carrying out a supplementary security policy analysis, and this will be presented on May 13th. And the aim is that we will have very good and thorough discussions and analysis within this group. The analysis include future international defence partnerships for Sweden, and including a discussion on NATO, and all options are on the table.
Now, before we get to our discussion, let's quickly remind you of what NATO actually is. It stands for the North Atlantic Treaty Organisation. It's the world's biggest military alliance. It was founded in 1949, partly due to a perceived threat posed by the Soviet Union during the Cold War. But it's not stopped expanding since the fall of the bloc. It's grown from 17 countries in 1990 to 30 today. It pools weapons and resources from its member countries that include battleships, warplanes, missiles, and more than 3 million personnel. If a NATO member is attacked, the others consider that an act of violence against them all. So let's bring in our guests for today. From Moscow, we're joined by Dmitry Babich, a political analyst at Inosmi, the internet media project based in Moscow. From Helsinki, Owen McNamara is visiting research fellow at the Finnish Institute of International Affairs. And from Brussels, we're joined by international affairs strategist Nicholas White. Gentlemen, welcome to Inside Story. Dmitry, let's start with you. How will Russia react if the two countries join NATO? It's threatened to deploy nuclear weapons to the Baltic border region and Kaliningrad. Should those threats be taken seriously?
So far the statements were mostly made by the former Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev, not by President Putin himself. So I wouldn't read too much into the statements from Medvedev. Obviously, Russia is very upset and distraught about the possible membership of Finland and Sweden in NATO. Let me remind you that during the Cold War, our relations with these two countries were not bad. With Finland, they were actually good. But in fact, this membership won't bring much of a change because both Sweden and Finland took part in dozens of military exercises in the last 10 years, all of them directed against Russia. In all of them, Russia was basically almost officially named as the potential enemy. There are NATO troops on the territory of Finland, or maybe not on a permanent basis, but they visit and they always have a chance to move in very quickly. So, in fact, strategically, this membership will not bring much of a change. So I think most of the protests from Moscow are like ritual protests. Like, this was supposed to happen. I think President Putin took it into account when he took his decision on Ukraine.
Owen, do you think that's right, that President Putin had taken this into account? I mean, how likely is it that Sweden and Finland will become NATO members in the near future? Is there any doubt that they soon will be?
Well, it looks more and more probable by the day, right here now. I agree, surprisingly, with Dmitry, in the sense that I don't think it will make a very, very big difference, because Finland and Sweden have been very intensely cooperating with NATO for the past decade or more. But I do crucially disagree with Dmitry in the sense that these exercises and these drills through which they have been cooperating through have been directed against Russia. NATO and indeed the independent defense postures of Finland and Sweden have been defensive and defensive against a Russia that has proven itself ever more revanchist over the past decade. So that is how things have been, how things are now, that both the sense in Finland and in Sweden is that although strong, their independent defense capacity is no longer enough of an insurance policy, considering the very brutal aggression that we are seeing from Russia in Ukraine at present. And they need an extra layer of deterrence, and they need to be never again alone. And NATO's collective defense offers them that option. Okay. So it is very, very likely that both states will apply for NATO membership within the next few weeks. And the ratification process is very likely to begin at NATO's Madrid summit in June.
OK. Dmitry, I'll give you a chance to come back on that in a moment, but let's bring in Nicholas White then in Brussels. Nicholas, both countries are officially non-aligned militarily, that they've both, as we've been hearing, become NATO partners, taking part in exercises and exchanging intelligence. Have both countries now permanently abandoned their previous stance of strict neutrality?
Yes, well, if you talk to Finnish and Swedish politicians, they will object that they had abandoned this some time ago, that they were no longer being equidistant as they had been in the Cold War, but that they were very definitely collaborating with NATO from an external perspective, and they simply want to convert this to an internal, to being part of the team rather than cheering on from the sidelines. But this really goes to the heart of the whole current conflict, and this began because the war began because Russia was unhappy about Ukraine displaying self-determination and choosing its own path in terms of security, in terms of external alliances. Now we see that the lesson that Finland and Sweden are drawing is not that they should take Russian concerns into account, but that they should make these decisions autonomously for themselves. And I think it's very interesting that the major external intention of the Russian war against Ukraine has backfired quite spectacularly.
OK, Dmitry, I don't know whether you want to come back on what you heard in those two answers there. Let me put it to you that Russia's foreign minister, ministry rather, the spokesperson for the foreign ministry, insisted that Sweden and Finland are being dragged into NATO by the US. Are they?
Well, to a certain extent, I think this is something that Russians are very unwilling to admit, that Europe is changing, and it is changing for the worse. There are actually no more neutral countries in Europe. You know, for many decades, the dream of Russian intellectuals was to join Europe of neutral, peaceful countries. This Europe just doesn't exist anymore. I mean, Switzerland is no longer neutral. You know, it arrests bank accounts of foreign citizens. It joins sanctions against Russia, against other countries. Sweden is obviously also abandoning its neutral status. surprisingly, you know, the Central Asian countries, when they have meetings of their foreign ministries in that collective security treaty organization of which they are members, they say that they are not directed against any other country. When you have summit meetings of NATO, this is always about Russian threat or Chinese threat. So unfortunately, it's easier to find now neutral countries, surprisingly, in the previously dictatorial Central Asia, no longer in Europe. As for the reasons why Russia basically continued, I think the war in Ukraine started in 2014, let's be frank about it. In fact, it started in 2013 when a violent coup against President, legally elected President Yanukovych, was started with the support of foreign countries and dozens of policemen were killed. Of course, it was not a peaceful process. So the war started in 2013. In 2022, President Putin, to my mind, wrongfully decided to aggravate this war. But I absolutely disagree with the view that actually, you know, Russia was unhappy with Ukraine's independent stance. No, Russia was quite happy with Ukraine becoming independent in 1991. We had good relations until Maidan. That terrible coup in 2014, for 23 years, we had good relations. But Russia was unhappy about Ukraine actually becoming hostile to Russia. You know, we are not against independent Ukraine, we're against hostile Ukraine. The same story with NATO exercises in Sweden and Finland. My colleague in Finland said that these exercises are not directed against Russia, they are all defenses, they're all defensive. Against whom is Finland and against whom is Sweden? Against whom are they preparing to defend themselves? It is said openly, against Russia. They're not going to defend themselves against, I don't know, Norway or Denmark. Of course, against Russia. And this is sad because this region should be a region of peace. I mean, and unfortunately, with NATO membership, it will not be a region of peace, even formally. It will be a region of military blocs.
Okay. Owen, do you want to come back on that, particularly Dmitry's assertion that the war in Ukraine began in 2014 with what he describes as a violent coup?
We can go back longer than that, and we've a phrase in English, once bitten, twice shy, and we can go back to the war in 2008 in Georgia and the efforts of the Obama administration after that. And we can go back into NATO enlargement in this effort to extend liberal democratic peace and prosperity. NATO did something very unorthodox in the sense that it had it put in the pledge of no troops, no nukes eastwards. So essentially to reassure Russia, to show Russia its hand in a way, it didn't have very strong provisions up against Russia's borders, which, of course, the Baltic states and the Poles had been highlighting for many, many years. And NATO, to reassure Russia, stayed persistent with this right up until the illegal annexation of Crimea in 2014. And even then, the NATO Readiness Action Plan, Operation Atlantic Resolve, and later on, the Enhanced Forward Presence, these deployments have been very, very light and scalable. And NATO has relied for its deterrence on mobilization, keeping most of its troops in the West, and only saying that it will call them into the region if the security situation deteriorates further and Russia displays even more aggression.
Okay.
So this idea that NATO is the cause of this major buildup that Russia is fearful of is a red herring that is featuring in the Russian narrative as they attempt to justify their revisionism and their efforts to reconsolidate and their sphere of influence, okay, former glory in Central and Eastern Europe, something that Finland and Sweden do not want to be part of. And this is what is propelling their effort towards NATO right now.
OK, two questions for Nicholas, starting with what will Sweden and Finland bring to the alliance? Just how useful are they to European security?
Oh, Sweden and Finland have got very impressive military establishments, certainly on a par with any of the decent Western European countries. So from that point of view, they bring a very professionalized, well-experienced force of personnel. And of course, they also close the strategic gap around the Baltic Sea. The geographical dimension is very, very important here. They basically turned the Baltic into a NATO lake, which it previously was not. Okay. So it's very helpful for NATO to have them in.
So what are the dangers then for the wider Baltic region, for Estonia, for Latvia, for Lithuania, the Baltic states south of Finland, of course, which also border Russia, bearing in mind that we've got the exclave of Kaliningrad sandwiched between Poland and Lithuania?
All of these countries have been very concerned about the potential for aggression from Russia since their independence in 1990-1991. And all of them, with the exception of Sweden and Finland, had already made the determination that the best way to preserve that independence was to join NATO. As I said earlier, this conflict began because Russia did not accept that Ukraine was an independent state. It's absolutely clear if you look at what President Putin has said, what other Russian politicians have said. This is about whether countries have the right to choose their own future. Finland and Sweden have now decided that they will choose their own future, and they're choosing their future within NATO. And Russia needs to accept that that is how the world works.
Dmitry, Russia needs to accept that's how the world works. The country's deputy foreign minister said that Sweden and Finland joining NATO would seriously worsen the military situation in the region and lead to the most undesirable consequences. What was meant by that?
Well, I think Nikos was quite right when he called the Baltics a NATO lake. Whenever you have a whole sea controlled by just one military bloc, this is always bad. It's like Ottoman Empire controlled the Black Sea in the 17th, 18th century. The same story here. In fact, the image of Sweden and Finland in Russia is still very good. We don't want to be enemies with them. And of course, there is a zero chance of a military solution like the one that Putin used against Ukraine, simply because Finland and Sweden behave much more rationally than the corrupt and brazenly nationalist Ukrainian regime that established itself by force in 2014. So I don't expect anything like what happened in Ukraine. Okay. But I expect a lot of hostility, and I expect a lot of paranoia, not on our side. Let me remind you that every year in Sweden, there is a paranoia about these so-called Russian submarines. There was only one Soviet submarine that was once indeed caught in the Swedish waters, and it got there by accident. But every year we have it.
All right.
So this is just one example how paranoid these countries can be about Russia, and this is unpleasant.
Let me just throw that to Nicholas very briefly. Do you want to respond to that, Nicholas?
I mean, Dmitry, you say so-called Russian submarines. If they're not Russian submarines, where are they from?
As you know, last time it was discovered that this was just a lie from a person who claimed that he had seen a submarine, but there was no submarine. But almost every
they
year,
exist.
There
okay.
are big military operations catching Russian submarines, and they never bring any results. Several times we had it.
Okay, I don't want to get bogged down into a row about submarines, particularly. Owen, you're in Helsinki. To what extent is this NATO membership bid being driven unusually by Finland here, that Sweden is actually being swept along and into the alliance because of its eastern neighbours' desire to join?
Well, I wouldn't say anyone is being swept along here. These states, NATO is a democratic alliance, and prospective members have to apply for membership. So all states will make their own sovereign decisions based on their strategic calculations. But yes, you're right. Finland is the front runner, so to say, among the two states. And things have been seismic here throughout the spring. I mean, before February 24th, where Russia launched its large-scale military assault, its illegal assault on Ukraine, before that date, only a number of weeks before that date, the Finnish Prime Minister, Sanna Marin, said that Finnish NATO membership was very unlikely to happen during her tenure. That is what she said. But because of Russia's brutal aggression that is displayed in Ukraine over the past number of months, the Finnish public has now flipped. It used to be, you know, in the last number of years, 60% against NATO membership, 20% for, the rest don't know. Now it's more than 60% for, 20% against, and the rest don't know. So there's been a resounding reversal in favor of NATO membership, driven by Russia's aggression, not driven by anything else, as Finland and the Finnish public now believe Russia is no longer taking calculated risks. It's taking major risks. As Barack Obama reflected on Putin's actions in Ukraine, Putin has bet the farm on this, very, very aggressive. And Finland needs the maximum deterrence option and the maximum collective defense option, so that Finland has quite an impressive record fighting alone, but it still, that is not a desirable option. And Finland desires to be never again alone. And that is very much a bottom up process that is occurring here in Finland right now. And that is what is propelling the bid for Finnish NATO membership forward.
I'm sorry to cut you short, Owen, but time is against us here. A couple of more questions for Nicholas. What changes, Nicholas, would membership require both countries to make in terms of foreign and security policy?
It's a good question. And the answer is that, by and large, these changes have already been made. It will require Finland and Sweden to align their military policy, their procurement policy, their general stance of engagement in the outside world with the North Atlantic Council, with the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. But the fact is, as you mentioned in your introduction, that Finland and Sweden have already been largely participating in NATO exercises. So to a large extent, this integration has already happened. What we're looking at is the formalization of a relationship that until now has been provisional and transactional, and shifting it towards something that is more fundamental and strategic.
Okay. And will, Nicholas, both countries act in unison regarding NATO membership? Could you perhaps foresee a situation where one joins without the other? And how long will the ratification process take? I mean, Norway's prime minister is on record as saying, oh, it's going to take a matter of weeks, 2 weeks, she said. Is that realistic?
Yeah. First of all, I would not like to tell any Finn that their destiny is linked to Sweden, let alone vice versa. The two processes will proceed independently, but in parallel. It would be the least surprising outcome if the two of them end up joining at the same time, but other outcomes are, of course, possible. The ratification process, first of all, everybody really is in favour of this, so it won't take all that long. Having said that, in some countries there are formalities that simply take a while to get through. The president of Croatia has mentioned that he wants to make the process conditional on a completely different issue, the reform of the election law in Bosnia. I don't think that's a sustainable position, but it will have to be overcome. I would have thought it's likely to take less than a year. I can't really see why it would drag on for much longer than that, even in the most convoluted of parliamentary systems.
OK. Gentlemen, there we must leave it. Thank you to all of you for being on the programme today. Dmitry Babich in Moscow, Owen McNamara in Helsinki, and, of course, in Brussels, Nicholas White. As always, thank you for watching. Don't forget you can see the programme again at any time, but just by going to the website at aljazeera.com. For further discussion, join us at our Facebook page. You can find that at facebook.com/AJInsideStory. And, of course, you can join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle at AJInsideStory. From me, Adrian Finnegan, and the whole team here in Doha, thanks for watching. I'll see you again. Bye now.